Hey, everybody, this is Jeff Bajorek from the Why on the Buy podcast, wishing nothing but the best for you and yours this holiday season as we roll into 2019. Christy and I have some really exciting stuff in store for you as we head into January and beyond, and we cannot wait to share it with you. So as you head into this new year and you think about all the promise that is ahead, remember, when you know your why, your hows and your whats get much better.
That you named a dog Bacon.
All my dogs and cats and everything else have a food name, although it's usually a double entendre.
That is so funny.
So Bacon was Francis Bacon, and the thing that everything is better with. I currently have a dog named Whiskey, and Whiskey is obviously what one might imbibe on a Friday night.
Yes.
But it's also Whiskey A Go Go, the club, and so her proper name is Whiskey A Go Go. But
very
she's
cool.
Got the food stuff. And there's Roo the dog, and there's Groceries the cat, because Groceries was found in the parking lot of the Whole Foods.
Where do we start this? And the answer doesn't matter. We're having a good time. Right.
He couldn't wait to get in here.
You need sales balls to make sales calls. I'm tweeting that puppy. Okay. Hello, everybody. Happy New Year, and welcome to the first episode of Sell or Die for the year 2019. We are the premier sales and personal development podcast in the global universe. I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm joined by...
I'm Jen Gluckow, founder of Sales in a New York Minute and the author of that same book, Sales in a New York Minute. Now, is this the first episode or... I don't know. This is the first episode we're recording, but I think this episode releases on Thursday.
Oh. Well, there you damn go.
That's true. Yeah, we had Martin Rooney on Tuesday for our New Year's special.
We can't even keep up. We're giving you guys so much free content, much value, so many episodes.
But this is the first time that you guys are talking directly to the audience in 2019.
That's right. We are excited to be back.
We're going to set up a GoFundMe guilt site that when your income is doubled, you can give us half.
So, actually, what I would really like is $1 per listen. So, like, we just had 1 million listens, okay? If we had $1 per listen, we'd have $1 million.
How'd you get that math, Jen? That's brilliant.
You know, it was difficult, but that times table helped me out here.
Exactly. So... what's in store now? We're in the middle of this absolute... Oh, we have Alex Beard.
We have Alex Beard.
We have a friend of mine for the last, oh my gosh, almost 20 years.
Yep.
He is an artist in New Orleans. I met him after I gave a speech to the National Speakers Association, and we have remained friends. I bought a bunch. I'm a patron of Alex Beard.
So... Alex is an artist in New Orleans, but he's world renowned. I mean, he's creating books. He's freaking phenomenal. And you guys are probably wondering, you diehard you, why we're having a painter on Sell or Die.
He's not a painter. He's an artist. A painter is somebody that comes over and does your house.
Why we're having an artist on Sell or Die. But part of not being a starving artist is learning how to market your products and how to sell your artwork.
He's a thriving artist. And people flock, literally, to Alex's shows and his bookstores. He's got 5 books, best-selling books. He's a brilliant marketeer, not just a brilliant artist. And he has selected the genre of animals in Africa to convey his artistic message. He's done it in the form of books, but he goes over there once a year and lives in the jungle for a month to paint impressions.
He's a really cool guy. So if you need an artful New Year's kick in the ass to get selling, Alex is here to give it to you. But before we get to Alex, let's talk about what you can expect in 2019 and what we have in store for our amazing diehards.
Yeah, tell me, Jen, because I have no idea.
You have no idea? Yes, you do. Okay, so first of all, on January 1st, each of us released a book.
Woo-hoo. Oh, yep.
Yeah. It's already been best-selling on Amazon. Jeffrey's been number one bestseller. Mine is a bestseller. So help me kick his butt, please. So mine's called Sales and...
I'm going to work on this really hard. Like, I'm not even doing anything. She's like plugging everything she can into the deal.
Come on. on. I'm a first-time author. I'm a bestseller. That is freaking amazing.
I'm sitting on my hand so you can pass me.
Thank you. You know what? Now you're going to be like, I didn't even put any effort in, and that's how you pass me. Guess what? When I pass you, I passed you fair and square.
Hey, second place. No second place in sales. It doesn't matter if you're sitting on your hands or waving them in the air.
Well, right now I'm in third place, and I need your guys' help. So all you need to do is go to Amazon.com, search for Sales in a New York Minute. It's a book. You can buy the Kindle version for inexpensive, less money than you're going to spend on coffee this week, and it will help you. Also, you know what? Just get the hard copy, too.
There's a bonus. Jen will come to a personal seminar for you, just one person.
No.
Oh.
No, not really. But you should also go get Jeffrey's book, The Sales Manifesto. Both books will help you in the new year. Now, enough about our books.
Yeah.
We have a really cool, you know, way of doing things here at Sell or Die where we are constantly evolving, we are constantly growing, and trying to give you guys more and always better, improved podcast episodes. Because no one wants to listen to a podcast episode that sucks. So we take a lot of time and effort to plan out each episode and make sure you're going to get a ton of value from it.
Yeah, you don't ever see the behind the scenes stuff that goes on where Doug and Nada are literally busting their balls to be able to make sure that the donuts are right, that the guests are right, that the edits are right, that the five-star reviews are read. I'm going to give an example of that. Doug, do we have a five-star review?
We do have a five-star review from Robbie. Robbie writes, "There isn't another sales podcast that delivers as much relevant content as consistently as Sell or Die. That is a fact. Jeffrey and Jennifer and the company they keep are living examples of the fundamental components that make great salespeople. Each episode is presented with enthusiasm, heart, and a passion for translating a wealth of real-life experience and the wisdom gained from it into actionable lessons aimed at developing sales champions. It's always simple, rarely easy, and always worth it."
You know?
Wow.
I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean,
Robbie, that is so nice.
That's amazing,
Robbie.
Thank you.
You didn't win a damn thing, but we are thanking the hell out of you. I think it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. We would love for you to go give us a five-star review. It helps us be found by other salespeople, and it helps us get even better guests. So please, if you love what you're listening to on a daily basis, go to iTunes and give us that five-star review. Now,
this is the year that we're going to go for 1 million downloads before the calendar year is over.
That's right.
I think we'll crush that. I really do. Because I think 2018 for us was about expanding the quantity of different types of episodes. Mm-hmm. We expanded to 5 days a week. We offered different types of episodes. And I think that was really important. And I think we nailed that objective for 2018.
And we didn't compromise our quality.
No, exactly.
No. So one of the things that we're going to be doing this year, we have a company retreat coming up. And at the company retreat, we're going to spend a lot of time thinking through our Sell or Die content and episodes so that we can come up with a content calendar. And if you're not a member of the Sell or Die Hard official Facebook group, now's a really good time to get into that group because we're going to be giving you our topics ahead of the episode so that you could actually tell us what questions you want answered, what information you want on the topic, some sort of situation that you might be struggling with or having a challenge with that you want help with, and we are going to be addressing it along with you. So 2019, we're looking for way more engagement from you and with you, and we are going to be your people.
Yeah, 2018 was a lot for us about expansion. I think 2019 is going to be more about engaging with the individual listener and talking about what you guys want to talk about, what you're dealing with day to day. That's going to be our focus.
Exactly.
We're gonna bring back some of our best guests, but we're gonna have new guests that will rock the house. We are not gonna compromise one iota on the quality of the show. We're gonna try to enhance it if we can. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's one of the best.
Okay, now, before we get into the episode with Alex, who is an amazing.
Yeah.
Do we have some sort of, like, celebratory music we can play for a minute?
John Philip Sousa?
No, like, dun-dun-dun.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
That that was for Rachel Berlin. Rachel is a diehard. She listens to us, she engages with us in Facebook, and she just got a promotion. So Rachel, woo! Congratulations on becoming a sales manager. We are so excited for you, and you are gonna kick butt in 2019.
Rachel, if you are listening and you will send us your address to sellordie@gittimer.com, we will send you my little book of leadership autographed.
Whoa!
So that when I'm dead, you can go on eBay and sell it and make a lot of money.
I love that. I love that.
On to our conversation with Alex Beard. He is my friend. He is an amazing artist, and he's a genuine human being, family guy. No longer starving artist, an overall really intellectual guy. Please take a strong listen, maybe twice, to the great Alex Beard. Alex Beard is an experienced painter, but not that kind of a painter, not like paint my house. He's an artist, a fine artist, who has managed to utilize maximum creativity by blending his desire to paint with his desire to be a social scientist, humanitarian, world beater and saver of animals that what need saving.
Including us.
Yeah, exactly. So it's he invented a new extinct species called the Humanosaurus.
That's his next book.
And he's here today to talk about it. No, we're pretty much extinct. Well, the robots are coming, so we'll figure out what they want to do with us. I think they're planning now in a meeting in New Jersey at a Hilton. would that be cool or what? They'll like file in.
Well, you know, the irony, of course,
they have a badge.
The irony is that it's taking place at a Hilton in New Jersey, but none of the computers are actually there.
Exactly. They're in the cloud.
Exactly. Alex is a master artist who has displayed his talents and his artwork all over the world. He lives in New Orleans, Louisiana. After Katrina, he moved from Charter. Were you on Charter?
Yeah, I was on Charter Street. Yeah,
exactly. On Charter to Magazine, where he now resides and is
Don't give away his home address. Our diehards may show up.
No, that's where his studio is.
All right.
And when did you realize that creativity was at your core?
I'm still working on that.
But I mean, certainly at an earlier age.
Yeah, I mean, I started drawing with the intent of being artistic when I was a little kid, you know, 7 or 8 years old. I grew up in New York City, and I went to the Natural History Museum after school to draw the totem pole.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah,
I
was great.
I just didn't draw anything. I just had to paint a quarter. But I went to the Natural History Museum in Philadelphia like 100 times.
Yeah, that's the most extraordinary places, right? Because you can get lost in these sort of rambling structures full of oddities, minutiae, and the grandeur, right?
Yep.
And so for me, I started drawing and painting them then, and I've been a storyteller, whether that means actually telling stories, writing stories, or having paintings that have a narrative to them since I was pretty young. I was never a prodigy. It wasn't that I was great at it out of the gate. It was that I loved doing it. And so as a result, I pursued it, right? I mean, I think that there's something important to that. You have to love what you do. You don't have to love what you make, but you have to love the making of it.
Ooh, I like that.
And would you say that enhanced your ability to be successful, the fact that you loved something that you were doing?
It's the whole key, because it meant that I was not willing to accept no, first of all. Even if it meant that I didn't necessarily get to where I wanted to get the way that I expected to get there, I was unwilling to have a plan B in terms of career. It wasn't like I was going to try this art thing on for a while, and if it didn't work, I would go back to being an accountant. Right? It was that I was going to be an artist, and one way or the other, I was going to figure it out. And yeah. that then meant that I had hits and misses, but each one of them led me farther down the path, right? It's like walking through the forest, to use another metaphor. And not the don't lose the forest for the trees expression, but rather I don't know the path specifically that I'm walking through the forest on, but I know that I'm walking through the forest.
Yeah,
and so keep in mind, diehards, this is a very important part of this process. Alex is a genuine artist in many – in every respect of the word. And very few jobs or careers or paths have a first name, starving. And so when you recognize, and I'm sure you thought about it all the time, starving artist is something that you actually were at some point in time, weren't you? Or did you?
Oh, for sure, and sometimes still am. I mean, yeah. You know, life is mercurial, and money is a screwy target. Because if you really want to make money, then you will figure out how to make money. But that yeah. does not necessarily translate to success, right? So for me, there's a combination of factors at play. One is I have certain numbers that I need to meet in order to fulfill my overhead and expect the life that I want to lead. And so then you got to figure out how to do that. Mm-hmm. And that is rather brass tacksy. Mm-hmm. How to get there is where the creativity comes in. The other part of it is then that I am unwilling to sacrifice the integrity of what I make in the doing of that. So if I panic because I'm upside down on my bills and think now I have to change everything that I do because I'm upside down, that is ultimately extremely counterproductive.
Oh, yeah, for right? sure.
So I'm constantly balancing these two things. How do I make my numbers and do my payroll, et cetera, at the same time constantly evolving as an artist and doing work that is worth people looking at, not mm-hmm. just buying, but in the larger panoply of life that it has value.
Cool. I love that. So diehards, you may work at a job, at a sales job, where it's an entrepreneurial startup and there are no processes yet, and you're navigating or sailing through that sea, like Alex just mentioned, and you have to be creative every day, day in and day out, to get to the sales that you want to make and to figure out your own processes. Or you may have a job where all the processes are set and there are certain expectations. But either way, the key is going to be some of these things that Alex just mentioned. So I recommend you go back and listen to this again, because Alex just brought up some amazing concepts right
yeah,
now.
And what he said is, I left myself no back door.
Yeah.
There's only a front door, and he's standing in the front of it. In fact, I met him when he was standing in his front door.
That's true.
Oh,
with
cool.
my dog Bacon.
Yeah.
I love that. You named a dog Bacon.
All my dogs and cats and everything else have a food name, although it's usually a double entendre.
That is so funny.
So Bacon was Francis Bacon and the thing that everything is better with. I currently have a dog named Whiskey, and Whiskey is obviously what one might imbibe on a Friday night.
Yes.
But it's also Whiskey a Go-Go, the club. And so her proper name is Whiskey a Go-Go, but
very
she's
cool.
got the food stuff. And there's Roo the dog, and there's Groceries the cat, because Groceries was found in the parking lot of the Whole Foods. And actually, that's not true. I have four pets currently that are not named after food. I have four zebra finches whose names are John, Paul, George, and Ringo.
Perfect.
Okay, there we go. Well,
cool.
That
I know that's
is,
a side note, but nonetheless.
No, that is a cool side note. Okay.
Welcome to my menagerie.
You feed them beetles, correct?
Yeah. Yes, I do. I feed them beetles. That's exactly right.
Okay, so you write books.
I do.
And a big portion of that, as you mentioned earlier in the episode, is storytelling.
Yeah.
And that relates to sales, because we're always trying to create the story that we're telling to our prospects, to paint the picture for them. What kinds of tips do you have for our salespeople to create the right sales pitch, the right story?
Well, the first thing is authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
That if you're lying is the wrong word, but if you're fudging, people know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to cover your panic, people know.
They can sense it.
They can sense mm-hmm. it, like a dog on fear,
mm-hmm.
right? So as a result, be authentic.
Okay.
The thing that you're trying to sell, know it, love it, and that will translate. Then I would say, know who you're selling it to, and specifically go out of your way to be nice to them, to listen to them, to find out what they want, so that you can then take what you have, the authenticity that you're bringing to the table, and gear it so that your client is the receptor of something that not only you can convince them that they want, but something that they actually need.
Let me put it into layman's terms for salespeople. The first sale that's made is the salesperson. And if the customer doesn't buy the potential of you, they're not going to buy anything. I went to a gallery with Alex last night, and you would have thought Jesus walked in the door the way they greeted him.
Oh, I thought you were talking about when you walked in.
No.
No, that's when God walked in the door.
That was a whole different walk-in.
I gotcha.
But I think that they had an expectation of who was going to arrive. They already knew his work. They knew his books. He was an invited guest. But when he got there, he immediately engaged everybody. And he did it in a way where he showed both humility and the ability to establish rapport. And those were two elements that he didn't care what he dressed. Did you like pick your clothes out to you put your nice clothes on? I noticed your pants had no paint on them.
Yeah, that was as far as I went. My shoes were still pretty bespeckled. I wore a tie because
that's
I thought that it might
look.
Be a little – it might be appropriate for the environment.
Right, but it wasn't where you were GQ.
No, for sure not.
You were AQ, sure. Artist. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Well, back to authentic.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I think, frankly, beauty is not just the aquiline nature of one's features.
Yeah, thank goodness for me.
I'm going to leave that one just sitting right on the table.
Thank you very kindly.
So I would also say that when you're – and this is hugely important, that quite a lot of a successful sale for me is not just the transactional nature of the book or the piece of art or the print or whatever it is going to the client, but how do they feel about what they've bought from me in my wake? What do they feel about once I'm gone?
Yeah.
They have the thing that they have. If the relationship that they had with me and the buying of it was a bad one, it will always have a sour taste in their mouths and they will not come back and they will not tell their friends that they should come and be patrons of mine. If, however, I go out of my way to give them a little lanyap, right? That's an expression we have in New Orleans, which means a little something extra. Whether it just means a personalization on the bottom of it or drawing something on the back of the painting so that it's personalized to the people, or in the case you were talking about going to the gallery last night, instead of just signing people's books as they came looking for an autograph, give them a remark. Do a little drawing for them. Spend the extra 30 seconds because it goes a long way. Mm-hmm.
People feel mm-hmm. so special as a result of
they
that.
Do.
Sure. And then they cherish what they have of yours, not just because they cherish the thing, but they cherish the relationship that they had with you in the getting of the thing.
So this is a podcast, which means for a lot of you, you don't get a chance to see us.
That's why you should follow us on Instagram. I'm at Gittimer. Jen is at Jen in any minute, all one word.
We post pictures of our travel, behind the scenes of the podcast, and of course, sales wisdom. If you're not on Instagram, we just gave you one great reason to join.
So follow us today, and you might get a shout out on our next Motivation Monday show.
At Gittimer, at Jen in any minute, we'll see you on the gram.
Is gram one of those words that if you're cool, you use gram instead of Instagram?
Now it is. I would say we'll see you on Insta.
Yeah, I would say gram. You say Insta, I say gram.
When I first bought from Alex, the line app I received was he accepted my bad check. Well, you and I have known each other for long enough to know that that check wasn't for very much, and so it was fine with me.
Oh, boy.
That's funny. But I have also seen the evolution of Alex's art style and the evolution of his intellectual creativity, where it went from human things pretty much to animal things, using the same techniques and the same strategies, but you have blossomed into an incredible reproducer of thought and amazing graphic.
Well, it's very nice of you to say. I mean, as I said earlier, I love what I do. And so hopefully that translates.
It does.
Because
it does.
I love what I,
it
you know,
does.
And because
it
I love what I do, it means I do it a lot. And therefore I get better at it too.
Mm-hmm.
It translates and it resonates.
Yeah.
Because when someone sees it, they go, wow, wow.
I mean, when I'm looking for, and this, you know, since we're specifically talking about sales and sales techniques here, when I'm working, I'm looking for universality. Mm-hmm. So if I'm doing a drawing or a painting or something like that, I'm trying to tap into the intrinsic way in nature that things move if I'm doing something that's, you know, abstract naturalism or something like that, right? Because I think that you as the viewer then are more comfortable looking at what I'm making if it speaks to something which is universal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's then also true in terms of sales, that if you're selling the universal nature of whatever it is that you have, that that will translate also, right? So you got a dual technique. One is you're specifically talking to the individual that you're selling. The other is you're talking to the entirety about the value of the thing that you have for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So right. Is there mathematics included in your art process?
There is a ton. I mean, I'm very interested in the divine proportion and Fibonacci's exponential growth rate and where does the eye naturally go in inside of a composition and how have people in the past use depth and dimension to take the two-dimensional surface and expand it, right? So that's everything from, 1 point and 2 point perspective to give a horizon line to chiaroscuro, where you're using light and dark to have certain things come forward and other things go back. And that's all very mathematical. But it's not math about how you do your taxes. This is math. This is the math that's the language of the universe.
So Alex is not talking about making your quota here, diehards.
No.
What he's talking about is knowing your product and knowing your subject so that people understand the depth of you and are willing to take you in as a trusted advisor.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, to take the same metaphor that we were using earlier with the boat trying to tack across the lake. If you're trying to sell somebody a boat, don't just know how the boat put together, but know how the water works too.
Mm.
Know the ethos of the nautical life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Know the context of the universe in which you're operating.
Yeah.
Because that will then, you know, give you that authenticity that you're looking for, as well as a connection to the person who's likely to want to buy a boat.
Right.
If you go from selling cars to selling boats, and now you try to use the same playing field to talk to the boat buyer as the car buyer, those are two different universes. So know the universe you're playing in.
One thing I find very interesting is that earlier in the conversation, you referred to yourself as not just an artist or an author or any of those, but also as an entrepreneur. And many of our creative entrepreneurs, and they are entrepreneurs, are really good at the thing they do. So they're really good at making art, or they're really good at baking cakes or whatever it may be. But seeing the business side of it, I think that there's a fear involved because they don't put as much attention. That's not their strength. How can they overcome that? What would you tell them?
Well, it's kind of a sticky wicket. Some of it, I would say that if you don't have the means to go out and hire somebody or partner with somebody whose specialty is that,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to need to work a little harder to figure out how you can at least get good enough at that to stabilize yourself, to put yourself in a position to find somebody to work with you who is expert at that so that they can do their expertise while you use your expertise.
Otherwise, you're going to have to work a lot harder.
A ton. And right. You're not going to be very good at it.
Right.
Now, the part of it that's the sticky wicket, of course, is that salaries are expensive.
Yes.
Right. So now you're talking about somebody, if you're an entrepreneur, I kill what I eat. Right? So that means if I want to eat more, I got to go kill more.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only so many hours in the day, and there's only so many pieces of art that I can make to do that. So you have a certain limit to the resources that you have to put forward, right? If you're a young entrepreneur or starting out and in a competitive marketplace, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul constantly.
All the time.
That is the nature of the beast. Mm-hmm. And so then you say to yourself, well, you know, I don't really want this extra $50,000 a year salary because I can't afford it.
Right.
So I'm going to try to compensate for it. But unfortunately, that is a snake that eats its own tail. So there needs to be a means by which you can surround yourselves with people who are doing what they do well so that you can do what you do well.
Cool.
And what Alex is saying here, diehards, is if you don't concentrate on your best thing, the thing that you do best and you divert yourself into 50 other things, you're going to be mediocre at everything.
Yeah.
And you're never going to bring out your true sales ability, your true entrepreneurialism, your true painting ability, whatever it is that you have is your best thing. Try to at least divest yourself of half of it. Whatever it costs you, it's worth the investment because you can triple your income based on your expertise.
Now, there's an odd piece of nuance here. And we'll use the cliche of master of none, but jack of all trades, right? Jack of all trades, but master of none. And so what we're saying is that you need to be a master of a specific thing, but we're not saying that you need to sacrifice being a jack of all trades at the same time, because you need to understand all the facets of what you're doing, even the things that you're not good at, so that when you have somebody doing them for you, you can see what they're doing.
And not be blinded by the fact.
And not be blinded.
Right. I remember when I started my business, I almost immediately hired someone to do the QuickBooks stuff. You know, all the just entering in the invoices and all that stuff. And my mom, who's really good at that, was like, why are you hiring someone? Like, you can do that yourself. I'm like, I know I can do it myself. I hate doing it. Yeah. It's going to take me 10 hours to do something. It's going to take an expert to do an hour in. You know, so
and you probably won't do it as well as they did in the
hour. And then I'm going to be stressing about it. It's going to be on my mind. And then I'm not going to do the other things that I love doing that I'm really good at. And so it's that fine balance of figuring out what can you outsource and who can you outsource it to versus what do you really need to do.
Yeah. I mean, I find, by the way, that this is leading down the track to suggest that you need to have a big payroll. And I don't think that that's the case, because a lot of the work that we're talking about is stuff that can be subcontracted out.
Mm-hmm.
So you find – and that's the point of having an understanding of the various facets of what you do, so that when the time comes that you need somebody else to do it, you're not searching blindly in the dark. You have a specific task and there is a specific person that can execute that task. Go get them to do the thing you need. And then once it's done, move on.
Cool. I love it.
Totally love it as well. So – most people don't know, you know, you paint a lot of animals.
I do.
But you don't go to the zoo to paint them. You go to Africa to paint them, don't you?
I do. That's true, yeah.
Yeah. What's that like?
Well, I go to Africa because I love it. and I've been doing it since I was a teenager. The what's it like part is, for lack of a better way of putting it, I walk off into the bush and camp on the ground at night, and camels carry my stuff, and I spend my days tracking elephants on foot and keeping the lions away from the camels at night.
There you darn go.
Oh, yeah. So there you go.
There you go. And diehards, you're waking up hoping your fucking car starts.
And he grew up.
Now, what I would say about that then is that the what I do, I do it, as I said, because I love it, but I also think that there's a deeper raison d'etre. Which is that if I'm interested in the intrinsic way in nature that things move, I go to nature so that I can observe it, so that I can then process it to put it in my art to make it universal for people back who are looking at what I make. Now, part of that then, in the same way that you need to understand the breadth of your business, part of being off in the bush is understanding the breadth of the environment in which you are. So it's not just the thing that's in front of your nose, but the stuff that's hiding behind the bush. You need to know about them too, right? You need to know the potential pitfalls so that you can avoid them.
There's snakes out there.
There are snakes out there, and they don't like it when you step on them.
Yeah, and most of them live in New York.
It's interesting that you grew up in New York and you're camping out in the bushes in Africa and tracking elephants.
Yeah, well, you know.
Pretty different.
Yeah. Camping out to a New Yorker is like a Holiday Inn, right?
Yeah, well, a refrigerator box under a bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, I would also then say that by being out in a place like that, it gives you a greater understanding of the integrated nature of the system in which you are finding yourself, right? To the point of it's not just the thing in front of your nose, but the stuff that's around you. And that is a pretty good metaphor, as we said already, for the way that your business works. But it then also gives you an elevated sense of responsibility, because you are a part of that system, inexorably linked to it, right? So that then gives you a responsibility to give back, to preserve the thing that you love. In the case of my interest in Africa, it means that I do conservation work. It means that I started a public charity, and it's not, you know, I didn't start the World Wildlife Fund. I started something that would be small that I could use as a means to sell art and then process the art and the money that comes through that back through a 501c3 to be able to give the money away so that I could then give it to the communities where I was where I go in Africa so that they could help protect their wilderness, which is the thing that I love. Now, I know that in that case, we're talking about art to nature, nature to charity, charity to giving back as responsibility. But it doesn't just have to fit into something that's as philanthropically minded as that. You have a responsibility, I believe, to have the same kind of understanding about your business and your clients and your family, et cetera, where you need to be an active participant, ensuring not just its survival, but its success. And so that kind of responsibility ties into the authenticity of what we were talking about earlier. Because if you do understand the playing field, then you by nature will want to do something to keep that playing field intact and to make it better because it's the thing that you love and you understand.
I would challenge you diehards that alexbeardstudio.com will have all kinds of inspiration that you can go to and maybe hang some stuff on your wall to remind yourself that you need to be more cognizant about the environment around you, not simply the quota that you were given by somebody else.
For sure, yeah. For sure. There's a notion of proactive versus reactive. And I think that the proactive business person is one who is going after it.
Yeah.
The reactive one is the guy who gets the quota and just tries to match it because mm-hmm. that's the reaction to the assignment they've been given. I am a big believer in go the extra mile, do the unasked, and perform beyond the expectations of those around you.
Cool. Well, this has been amazing.
No,
thank you.
No, way more than that. This has been intellectually amazing.
Yes.
And inspirational from a diehard perspective and from our perspective.
Thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for being a Sell or Die.
I can't tell you all how much I love what you do and love you individually and how honored I am to be sitting in a room with you with microphones in front of us.
Oh,
it's a great treat for me.
Well, there you darn go, diehards. Go for it.
All right. Up mastering his craft and at the same time being able to understand all the other aspects involved with artwork, including sales and selling.
Keep in mind, and one of the things that Alex didn't really talk about is that he is a product of New York City. And he grew up in the Manhattan environment, actually had, after Katrina, he opened up his gallery in Soho.
We went to competitive high schools, but at very different times.
Reopened up his and you have to understand, so he had the street smarts. Now, when I met him and went into his studio, and this is 2003, we engaged. I wanted to buy his art because I was attracted to it, but he wanted to get my sales knowledge. Mm-hmm. He was attracted to that. So literally, I'm giving him signed books, and he's reading them. So we became friends over the fact that we each had talent that the other person admired.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the thing, right? If you're an entrepreneur, a lot of times you're really good at whatever it is you do. You make cupcakes. You're like the best cupcake maker on the planet. You design clothing. You're the best designer on the planet. But that does not automatically make you good at selling. Okay. That makes you good at what you do. And sales is a totally different skill. And selling is a totally different skill. But like our podcast says in its name, Sell or Die.
Now, when people come into Alex's gallery, they're attracted to his art, but they may not be attracted to his price. And so they'll see a piece of art in the window. They go, oh, how much is that? And they'll say, oh, it's $14,000. Like, what? Well, you get what you pay for. This is a piece of museum quality art. And that's who Alex is. Now, in 2003, he was much less expensive. I became a patron of his when it was affordable to me. Back in the day. But more important, he has evolved over this period of time. He's taken his art and reproduced it into book form. He's using his marketing genius, not just in drawing, but in reproducing and creating markets for little kids to be able to understand more about conservation and more about animals of Africa. I mean, this guy is dedicated to mastering his craft in a way that it has become attractive, because you can buy a piece of Alex for $10,000, but you can also buy one for $24.95.
Okay, so Jeffrey, you just mentioned two really important things that I want to point out. One, if you're an entrepreneur trying to get really good at selling, you need to be dedicated.
Yep. Okay. You need to master your craft.
Master your craft and then get dedicated to your product. So that means you need to have a strong belief system in your product. That means you need to have the right attitude when you walk into your shop or whatever it is you're selling online, wherever it may be. The second thing you mentioned was price. Okay. You have to believe in your heart of hearts that your prices are fair. Because if you don't believe in your prices, your customer is going to sniff that and sense that out immediately, whether you're an entrepreneur or a salesperson. Okay. I remember working with salespeople who would be like, but our product is so expensive. I'm like, well, that's the first problem. Right. Okay. If you don't believe that this product is worth the price, you ain't going to sell it for that price.
Go into Alex's studio and go in there and say, $14,000 for this. And he's going to say, yeah, I was thinking about raising it, but I think I'm going to keep it there for the moment. And it completely throws the other person off their trying to negotiate a lower price.
Let's talk about some of the things that our diehards can do to hold their price, okay, mm-hmm. and to sell at their price. So number one, you just said, is use humor.
Right. And the other two, the other one specifically that I use is our prices are fair and our prices are firm. Mm-hmm. And that way the person gets the fact that they're either going to buy into the value of it or not. And second, the second thing I would do is I say, look, this is a piece of my fine art. It's an original. There are other things that you can buy here that give you the same reflection of my capability for a little less money, but still give you the reproductive beauty of it.
So have other options that may be less pricey.
Ooh. Pricely, yeah.
Pricely. Have other options that may be less pricey, but give less value. And, you know, that comes with determining what the customer perceives to be of value. So that
Or what they want.
Right. Right. That to me would be your first step as a salesperson or entrepreneur. You know, figure out what the customer is hoping for. What kind of emotion what is the emotional catch for them? What is going to make them open their wallet? And, you know, when you decide on something, at some point, price becomes out of the equation.
There's also a stepping stone. So if you walk into Alex's gallery and you don't want to invest $14,000 from day one, you can invest $30 in a signed book, keep it on your coffee table, look at it 20 times. Then when you go back to New Orleans again, you go, you know, I think I got to go back to Alex's studio and see what he's got.
So diehard, what's your stepping stone? What is your foot in the door entry thing that will keep, you know, something that they can buy that is a reminder that they need more from you?
Here is a true story. I got a call in 1999 from a CMO who bought the customer satisfaction, worthless customer loyalty is priceless, and he wanted to buy 1,000 books. And I said, well, that's great. What else can we do for you? How many people do you have? Well, we have 20,000 people. Okay, can I come over? And that was a $5 million contract. And it started with somebody reading a $25 book, calling up and wanting 1,000 of those 25. So that was a $25,000 sale, and I bumped it to almost $5 million.
So I think, you know, obviously, every diehard wants that kind of sale, right? Who doesn't? But how do you get your foot in the door? What are you going to do differently this year, 2019, to attract those people to want to connect with you and want to call you and want to buy from you?
But keep in mind, this was in the days before the funnel. This was in the days literally before the internet had any kind of impact whatsoever. This was a transaction that was conducted over the phone. I invited them to a couple of my public seminars, and they bought. But now you can go into somebody's funnel, and you can spend nearly anything. You never even have to see the other person if you have the right offer and the right message, and it's compelling and it's believable, and you can transfer your message. I you know, it's just tremendous what happens today.
So speaking of entry points, we each have a book that's come out this year on January 1st, and you can get it for under $25 going to Amazon.com, search for The Sales Manifesto and get Jeffrey's book. And while you're there, add mine to your cart as well, Sales in a New York Minute. Get both books. I think there's even like a bundled price because a lot of people have been purchasing them together. And you will rock 2019.
And if you're dying to get into our funnel, which many people are, we have a webinar coming up. And
you do have a webinar coming up. It's coming up on January the 9th at 11 a.m. And the way to get tickets, you know what? We'll just put in the link to the show notes. You're not going to remember that long link I'm going to give you anyway. So just check the show notes. It'll say, get your webinar ticket here.
It'll be .com/something. No. And when you get in there, you will be in our funnel. And we can't wait to get you there. But I can tell you this. This is about manifesto mastery. This is a webinar that will start your year in a way that you cannot imagine. I'm going to talk about some things in sales that you have never heard of before that you'll be able to take out into the street and turn into money. And it's not having your best year ever bullshit. This is about going out and having a great decade. That's what the manifesto is all about. And I think that when you see the content of this webinar, I don't have to upsell you on anything. You're going to want more. You're going to want it on your own. So my recommendation is check the show notes, get into the webinar mastery thing, and roll.
That's right. All right, guys.
We're making it expensive, by the way.
We got to hop.
Yeah.
Thank you for being a diehard. We appreciate you.
And happy New Year.
Until next time, I'm Jen Gluckow.
I'm Jeffrey Gittimer. I'm reminding you to get out there and sell something, even if your New Year's ass falls off.
Sell or diehards. If you love the show, make sure you've subscribed.
And if you've subscribed, make sure you rate us on iTunes or give us a star on Overcast.
And if you've done all of that, tell a friend about the best sales podcast on the planet. Or better yet, tell both your friends.
And if you've done all of that, well, you're a true sell or diehard, and we thank you.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit sellordienetwork.com.